welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, May 5th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble labor reporter Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga sits down with Gabriel Aladua. The two discuss the harsh realities of Canada's farm labor system and how Canadians can take action to create fairer working conditions for all. Gabriel Aladua is a former migrant farm worker from St. Lucia and is now an outreach worker working with migrant workers across Ontario. Aladua is also the University of Guelph's first activist in residence. He is the author of Harvesting Freedom, The Life of a Migrant Worker in Canada. Here are Aladua and Kaluge-Kasuga in conversation. Take a listen.
Thank you so much, Gabriel, for joining us on the show today. I guess to start off, can you give our listeners just a little introduction to yourself and the work you do with Justice for Migrant Workers?
Extra special greetings to each and everyone in Radio Land today. My name is Gabriel. I am an organizer with the group Justice for Migrant Workers. What do we do? We do lots of things, but in a nutshell, one, we connect with migrant workers and organizers, and we try to educate them and inspire them. Two, we educate the Canadian public locally, nationally, and we also educate people internationally to let people know of the real exploitation and the challenges that migrant workers face in Canada. And thirdly, we pressure politicians to change those unjust immigration and unjust labor laws and create equality and fairness for migrant workers.
And I was particularly interested in your recent book. It was published this year in March. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Yes, for sure. The book, which is called Harvesting Freedom, it's basically a memoir and it outlines a lot about my life experiences and especially my experiences and challenges that I face in Canada. And that book, it highlights both our difficult living and our difficult working conditions in Canada. It spells out the root causes of our exploitation. It spells out a lot of the challenges that we face. And in Canada, we are invisible. Generally, the Canadian public, they don't know much because of whitewashing and so many things. Number three, generally, the Canadian public, I would call it the five D's of our stories. When we talk about our stories, they're quick to deny it. So they're quick to downplay it. They derail the conversation, they deflect the conversation, or they delay the conversation. And other things would be about that book. In my home country, no news is good news. But I discovered in Canada, no news. We don't have these things. No news in Canada is not good news. No news is because of unjust policies. No news in Canada is because a lot of the policies get to keep us quiet. And because of fear, we are forced to be quiet. So no news in Canada is not good news. And the book here is just one tool in our toolbox. One tool in the sense that one more opportunity for us to let Canadians know and the world know about the difficult conditions. How can we change the conditions if we don't talk about it? By talking about it, it gives us an opportunity to address it. And the book is one tool in our toolbox to let Canadians and the public know about the situation. And we are ready to deal with it, to challenge it, to correct it, to create a better life for migrant workers in Canada.
And I was just wondering, you know, you've been doing migrant worker advocacy for a while. You mentioned a bit of like how the struggles of migrant workers are almost invisibilized. And so what has it been like for you to be going through all these injustices and then have your stories, you know, swept under the rug?
A couple of things. For me personally, it has been a real difficult situation because in my home country, Canada have been good to me on so many occasions, right? So when I came to Canada, I expected if in my home country, Canada was so good to me, coming to Canada, I expected even more good things. That's one. Number two, in Canada, the truth is, when I came to Canada, I don't know, for some reason, I thought everything that was legal They were just, it was a fair program. And it took me some time to realize that, not because it's legal, it is just. It took me some time to realize that the politicians, they're not loyal to the voters. It took me some time to realize that the politicians are not loyal to the workers, that the politicians are loyal to their donors. And that the wishes of the donors are so, so, so different from the wishes of the workers and the wishes of the voters. And it took me some time to realize that. Going through those difficulties, it was tough. Because at the end of the day, you know what happened? Being a migrant worker in Canada, being a migrant farm worker, we are sandwiched between a rock and a hard place. What do I mean by that? In our home countries, the conditions, the things that force us to come to Canada, the high unemployment, the difficult conditions back home, they are still real. By speaking up, you stand the risk of being sent back home, being deported. You've been deported back to the country with the same condition that's forcing you to come to Canada, high unemployment and so on. So because of that, we are forced to be quiet. A lot of us are forced to be quiet because at the end of the workday, the weekday, at the end of the pay cycle, we want to have money to support our families. We are forced to be submissive, forced to be compliant because of those unjust policies, because at the end of the day, we want to make sure that we have money to support our families.
And it really puts you in a difficult position to have to choose between supporting your family, you know, and speaking up against these injustices. I'm really interested in the solidarity perspective as well. And so I was wondering, how can Canadians or people, any person living in Canada, continue this push to shop local in a way that still supports migrant workers?
Yeah, thank you so much. That's a good question. I get that question often. In the US, there's something that's called the Good Food Purchasing Policy. And Canadians ask me, where can I go and buy food that I know that is grown ethically and so on and so on and so on? That's a tough question. However, there are lots and lots of things that a Canadian can do to create a fair condition. So increasingly, it's very nice to know increasingly that more and more Canadians are becoming aware. And I'm pretty sure COVID did that. With stay at home, more Canadians became concerned about their food supply. And more Canadians are now asking questions about, is my food being grown by those who respect the soil, respect the environment, and respect migrant workers? So increasingly more people are concerned. But what can we do? There are lots and lots of things. So one, the politicians keep saying, that's not an issue in my riding. We are not saying that Canadians are bad. We are not saying the farmers are bad. We are not saying that the food that we grow in Canada is bad. What we are saying is that unjust laws and the unjust policies of the politicians, these are the bad things. So what Canadians can do is to push the politicians to change those unjust laws and unjust policies. Number two, when the issue of racism, you know, and the issues related to migrant workers, when those issues come up, speak about it. Speak about the injustices that migrant workers face at your dinner tables. The other thing is, educate yourself, because what happened is a shallow understanding of the issues is not enough. A shallow understanding of the issues is not enough. Ignorance of the issue is not enough. We need to take sides. And to take sides, you need to understand the issues. Educate yourself. Hear it from the horse's mouth. The book is just one tool to understand it even better. There are documentaries. There are other books that really help you to educate yourself about the issues. Take sides. Doing nothing, your silence is compliance. Your silence is violence. Your silence is helping and abetting to the status quo. So educate yourself. These are all the things that Canadians can do. Oh, and another nice thing, that's the easiest thing I can also say. So as individuals, we are so creative. There are lots of creative in our hands. We are creative as an artist, as a writer, and so on. Use our creative skills to let more people know about the issues. Use our creative skills to push people to take action. Use our creative skills so that the politicians become aware of the issues. Canadians can also inspire people. They can inspire people in the groups, in the schools, and so on, because a lot of the times the issues are made invisible, whitewashed, right? And confronting those things, addressing those things. So at the end of the day, there are lots and lots of things Canadians can do. And getting to the politicians, pushing the politicians to take action, this ultimate thing that I think Canadians can do to create a fair society, a just society, and create a better life for migrant workers in Canada.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think keeping pressure up on governments is definitely a very, very important part of this struggle. We've talked a lot about, you know, pressuring for change or pushing for change. And I was wondering, so what do more just laws look like? What would more just migration policies and labor policies look like?
Okay, that sounds like a big question. But, you know, for simplicity, you know what it looks like? Right now, there's a war going on in Ukraine. What does Canada tell Ukraine? Any amount. Come and have a new start. Any amount. Is that difficult? You know what Canada told people from Europe after World War II? As soon as they landed, hey, status, and they even gave them land. So what they did to the goats, they can do it to the gander. That's what we said. It's not difficult. We're not asking Canada to invent laws and create new laws. No. The same thing they've done in the past, they can do it. And what it is to grant status upon arrival. Because as it is right now, when migrant workers come here, we are tied to our employer. We are at our employer's mercy. That's one. If you grant status to a worker, you know what you're doing? You're giving that worker an open work permit. And, you know, by giving the worker an open work permit, you know what you're telling the worker? That I'm taking the pressure off you, the worker, and I'm putting it on your employer. Your employer know you have an open work permit, so you can work anywhere. So if the employer wants you and wants to keep you, the employer is forced to create the conditions that will attract you and keep you. So granting an open work permit is one. Status, which means in Canada, status is I call it a two-edged sword. If we have status, it takes care of our labor vulnerabilities and our immigration vulnerabilities. If I have status, I'm not concerned about speaking up because I have status. It takes care of my immigration vulnerabilities. I can speak up. I'm not that vulnerable to be deported. So status takes care of my immigration vulnerability. If I have status, I have an open work permit. And with the open work permit, it puts pressure on my employer, and my employer is forced to create the conditions to attract me and keep me if my employer really wants my work. But being tied to my employer, that's not cutting it. It's status upon arrival. So status is a two-edged sword. But I want to take it one step further. I want to tell you, more just laws is granting the worker status. In my books, as far as I know, by having status is like a free-edged sword. Have you seen a free-edged sword? What do I mean by that? If I have status, all those things that I am denied in Canada, if I have status, all those things I am denied, it cuts that away. If I have status in Canada, not having status, being a migrant farm worker, a lot of the things that we were excluded from, it is swallowed up. So by having status, it swallows that up. And the third thing about status, a lot of the fear that's in the program, if I have status, it cuts that away. So status is a free edge sword. What do I mean by that? It swallows up a lot of the things that I am excluded from. It cuts away my fear, and it eliminates everything that I am denied of. So status is a free edge sword. And in a nutshell, let me tell you, when the Europeans came here, you know what the Canadians said? We cannot deny them rights. We cannot deny them freedom. We cannot tie them to a farm. By having status, you're allowing the workers to access equality, fairness, and dignity.
I was curious about your experience with the change once you gained status as well. I know you came to Canada with the seasonal agricultural work program. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. I came with the SWAP program, for short it's called. Yeah.
And do you have an open work permit now?
Yes. Actually, I am a citizen right now.
Oh, nice. Nice. Awesome. So on a personal note, what's the difference like in being an advocate, you know, going from the SWAP program to now being a citizen?
Okay. Let me see. There are lots and lots of things, right? One, for me personally, I carry one leg of slavery, one leg of indentureship, and I tell people I have three legs. One leg of slavery from my mother's side, so my mother's descendants were exploited as slaves. I carry another leg of indentureship from my father's side. My father's descendants were exploited as indentured workers, and me, I'm now exploited as a migrant farm worker, being exploited in another form of exploitative labor. So I tell people I have three legs, and all those legs are of exploitation. So for me personally, my mother, my father, now me, then it would be my children. When will that stop? So for me personally, bringing an end to exploitation in my family, that is very significant. That's one. So that is a personal satisfaction I add to it. However, I want to say too, I believe the world, I believe Mother Nature, I believe the universe is is full of abundance. A lot of the things that they have, it has it in abundance. And there's enough for everybody. There is enough for everybody. And I believe strongly that no 1% or 10% of any population should control the majority. Never. I don't believe in that. I believe there's enough for everybody. So for me personally, all the fear I had of not being able to speak up, I have that power now. All those things I was that were denied to me, I have it now. All those things I was excluded from, I have it now. Is that the life I want for myself, or doesn't everybody deserve that kind of life? Living a life of fear or living a life of hope? Which one do you want? I want a life of hope for everyone, not just for myself, but for everyone. And I strongly believe that the universe has enough, more than enough, abundance for everybody to live that kind of life. I want to tell you that migrant workers are made invisible. We are made invisible, and that's not an accident. It's by design. From the very foundation of Canada, from the Chinese railroad workers, for over 100 years ago, Canada continues to use unjust immigration and unjust labor laws to work in tandem to keep migrant workers vulnerable, to keep migrant workers in precarious situations, to exploit migrant workers, essentially. So that's not something new to Canada. That's one. Number two, in Canadian law, we are not considered human beings. We are considered second class. Imagine, for example, we're in May now, but in February that gone, there's a holiday in February, and it's called Family Day. According to Canadian law, migrant workers are denied the right to participate in family life. We are not human beings in Canadian law. Is that an accident? Or is that by design? We are excluded from a lot of things. Another, if you look at exemptions, so we are denied the right, according to Canadian law. Let us look at things that we are excluded from. According to employment standards in Ontario, migrant workers, the laws that are designed to protect workers in Canada, migrant workers are excluded from that. We are excluded from overtime pay. We are excluded from minimum wage. We are excluded from statutory holidays. And so many things we are excluded from. Is that an accident? Or is that by design? If you look at the pandemic, during the pandemic, we were continuously encouraged, stay at home, stay at home, stay at home. Stay at home, where's my food going to come from? So we were forced to think about our food supply. But even during a crisis, I thought, during the crisis, unemployment so high in Canada during the pandemic, I thought Canadians would go to the farm and produce the food. Even during crisis, when employment is so high, Canadians still do not want to go to the farm. Why? Because the conditions are not right. The conditions are not just. And during the pandemic, what did we see? The borders were closed and it was open only to Canadians, citizens and permanent residents. But suddenly they opened the borders for migrant workers, because what they realized, that food security is at risk if migrant workers don't come. So right now, trust me, look at that, trust me. During the pandemic, what did we see? That we have no more migrant workers in Canada. We got a promotion. What's the promotion? We are all migrant workers. We are called essential workers. The country cannot run without us. Essential workers. But that is a very deceptive promotion. We are essential, but yet still, where are the conditions to show and treat us as essential? No, never. Is that an accident? Or is that by design? And that the good point here is, the politicians tell us the things, the nice things we want to hear, but below the surface of the things, the average person does not challenge, does not question the things the politicians say. And below the things that the politicians say, the unjust policies are still there. So how can we change that? We need to get deeper. We need to question things. We need to challenge things. But again, ignorance in Canada, ignorance is not an excuse. Have a shallow understanding of the issues is not an excuse. The books are there. The documentaries are there. There are lots of work for people to educate themselves about the issues and to take it on. In the USA, Canadians say the problem is worse, or the problem is in the US. That's what Canadians say. What do you say? What do you say? Depends on how much you know. How much you know depends on how much reading you want to do, how much listening you want to do, how much documentaries you want to. So are you going to be a spectator and watch, or are you going to be a player and take action and create a fair world?
You mentioned a couple of times the idea of surface level knowledge of the situation. So what is the common surface level knowledge of the situation for migrant workers look like, and how can people start to dig deeper? Or what does deeper knowledge look like?
One, the surface. At the surface, they would say, we are essential workers. That's what they refer to it. Or we are temporary foreign workers. Or they are just migrant workers, you know? And that is just the surface, right? Just the name, the label. That's how we are being referred to, one broad brush, or they are all just workers, right? At the surface, that's it. And that's one. Number two, when you go to the supermarkets, when you go to the farmer's market and so on, you just see the nice fruits and vegetables. And at the surface, you think it's family farm. That's what we think at the surface. But the invisibility, we're made invisible. The story behind those things, the real story behind those things, you don't see it, you don't get to hear about it. And that is what I mean by digging deeper. The real story behind your food, it's not told. And that is by design. Lately, I've been hearing a lot about misinformation and so on and so on. There's lots of misinformation, that's one. Number two, very few people want to hear straight from the horse's mouth. And that's why I'm so grateful for this opportunity that you heard it. You came straight to the horse's mouth and heard straight from me. And the other thing too, misinformation, I said, hearing it straight from the horse's mouth. The other important thing is not hearing the story at all. The story is kept quiet. So do you still believe that no news is good news in Canada, or no news is because of, dig deeper, dig deeper. The injustice that migrant workers face, there are lots and lots, and they're at every level of government. Everything is designed to give a nice impression. Oh, everything is okay, everything is fine. And because no news is good news, because you hear nothing. Dig deeper than that. And I want to tell you, no news in Canada is because of fear. No news in Canada is because of unjust policies.
So thank you so much again, Gabriel, for joining me on the show today. And you have a lovely rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thanks for doing that, because a lot of people are not aware. We can address it when we talk about it. Not talking about it is not an opportunity to address it. And you've created, you've given me an opportunity to talk about it. And the more people who talk about it, it gives us an opportunity to address it. And I'm really grateful for that.
Gabriel Aladua and Rabble Labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Gabby and Gabriel. For your own copy of Harvesting Freedom, The Life of a Migrant Worker in Canada, please visit Between the Lines Publishing. The link is in our show notes and on rabble.ca. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, we'll hand it over to Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Over to you, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. This week, national politics reporter Stephen Wentzel shares how newsrooms can be built to oppose racism and elevate underserved communities. Speaking at the South by Southwest conference in Austin, Texas earlier this year, MSNBC's Tremaine Lee explained how a diverse newsroom can dismantle systems of white supremacy. Specifically, Lee said that young, racialized reporters can help newsrooms deliver the stories of underrepresented communities. Lee explained that in addition to serving unrepresented communities, progressive news organizations can also continually explain the connections between systems of white supremacy that are present in government, police services, and the media. In labor news, Monday was May 1st, May Day, or International Workers' Day. Rabble Labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga focused on continued efforts to ensure equity across Canada's international supply chains and the protection of the rights of immigrant workers. Over the past year, unions have also continued to pressure Canada's government to ensure ethical practices along international supply chains. In July of 2022, members of the United Steelworkers Union, or USW, made a trip to Bangladesh as a part of a partnership with the Bangladesh Center for Worker Solidarity. Living conditions that USW members witnessed were heartbreaking. The garment workers that the USW visited were living off of approximately $100 Canadian per month. Immigrant and temporary foreign workers here in Canada also often struggle to find equitable employment. According to a report released last month by the Center for Policy Alternatives, only 49% of BC workers have access to permanent jobs with a single employer with at least some benefits. In other labor news, the largest strike by federal employees in Canada's history ended this week. On May 1st, of the 155,000 striking members of the Public Service Alliance of Canada, or PSAC, 120,000 of them reached a tentative agreement with their employer, the Treasury Board. On Thursday, the remaining 35,000 striking employees of the Canada Revenue Agency reached a tentative agreement as well. The agreements are effective until 2025 and secure wage increases of approximately 12% for all of the affected union members. PSAC was also able to secure important guarantees around remote work, allowing union members to apply for remote work considerations on an individual basis and creating more transparency in the review process. Also this week, Alberta's provincial election campaign officially kicked off with a voting day set for May 29th. Alberta's two foremost political parties, the governing United Conservatives and the official opposition NDP, are running very close in the polls. Alberta politics expert David Kleimenhage said that the election will likely come down to two factors. The first being which party can win in Calgary, and the second being how unpopular United Conservative leader Premier Daniel Smith is with traditional conservatives. The Alberta NDP have a strong presence in Edmonton and other urbanized areas, while the United Conservatives hold sway in rural Alberta, leaving Calgary as the final battleground. Another factor, as stated, is the United Conservatives' controversial leader, Daniel Smith. A CBC story earlier this year disclosed a conversation between her and preacher Artur Palowski, where she implied she was attempting to get charges against him thrown out. The charges against Palowski stem from his actions at the Coutts border blockade in early 2022. A court found Palowski guilty on two of three counts of criminal mischief earlier this week. And finally, the Canadian Labour Congress will be holding their annual convention next week in Montreal, and Rabble will be on-site covering stories important to the labour movement. Rabble will be covering seminars and events that include topics such as affordability, Indigenous justice, and tackling the climate crisis. See our full coverage of the Canadian Labour Congress convention in the coming weeks. As always, you can find the full version of these stories and much, much more on rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for our show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.